Hi, friends. Thank you for joining us once again for the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. It has been nearly a year since I've had the pleasure of speaking with you. And while I am still retired, thanks to the Saturday Frights podcast specials, I figured we should do one for the Diary podcast as well. Which brings us to this episode. Why am I recording it almost a year since the last episode? Quite frankly, it is because with the end of the Sunset Riders episode, I played an audio clip of the game I had intended to be the subject of that next show. Which, as many of you pointed out, was of course for Atari's 1980 classic arcade game, Warlords. It just didn't feel right to not tackle that classic arcade title. So, without further ado, let's get everything powered on, and let's get this show started.
Be where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2's trying to increase the power! Yahoo! You're all clear, kid!
As I've already mentioned, Warlords was released to the wilds of the arcade back in 1980. This, however, is not where I first encountered the game. I didn't experience Warlords at Showbiz Pizza, games people play, or even a local convenience store like most games I've talked about on the podcast. Probably, much like you, my first experience with the game was the home port version on the Atari 2600, and I'll touch on that a little later. Warlords was, of course, developed and produced by Atari Incorporated, designed and programmed by Greg Rivera, as well as Norm Evelyn. Both might be familiar names to all of you arcade addicts, as Greg worked on arcade titles such as 1980's Centipede, 1983's Star Wars and Firefox, as well as 1985's The Empire Strikes Back and Roadrunner, to name a few. Norm also worked on Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back and Firefox, but also designed and programmed 1980's Monte Carlo for Atari, as well as 1988's futuristic tank game Vindicators. Here's some fun facts. Warlords was originally called Castles and Kings. I honestly think they chose the better title. In fact, only a mere two prototypes were made featuring the original title, and apparently they were housed in a reformatted 1977 Sprint 4 cabinet, which was a rather large arcade game, hence the need to pare it down so it would fit in most arcades a little easier. Speaking of, Warlords was released to the arcades in April of 1980, and was actually licensed to Sega to be distributed in the Japanese market. The total of upright cabinets produced for Warlords number 1,014, with 1,253 of the four-player cocktail cabinets being made. This might be the perfect time to dive into the differences between the upright and cocktail cabinets. The big differences are the number of players each cabinet supports. With the upright Warlords, only 1 to 2 players could join the game. While four castles are presented on screen, the first and second player would always be assigned to the left and right bottom castles. Of course, with the four-player cocktail cabinet, you naturally have the option of having four players go head-to-head. It's a total battle royale. For what it's worth, we have a cocktail version at the Arcadia Retrocade. And when you get four would-be warlords together, I can tell you, in all honesty, the action can get a little boisterous. Surprisingly, it's more popular amongst the younger players, those around 8 to 12 years old. Another difference between those upright and cocktail cabinets is more of a technical one, and that is the upright features a black and white raster scan monitor, where the cocktail version has a 14-inch color raster scan monitor. Now, that doesn't mean when playing the upright you're seeing it in black and white. Of course not, as there is a color overlay. Furthermore, there is a colored 3D playfield of the castles, reflected by a mirror, which gives it a 3D look. It's kind of amazing looking, and I'll be sure to include an image of it on the Retroist post for this episode. Now, the goal of Warlords is for a player, by using their paddle or spinner control, similar to what you would find on Atari's 1976 hit Breakout, to defend their mighty castle from attack by either the game's AI, in the form of the castles of villainous black knights, or even a fellow player, another warlord in a two-person or even three-to-four-person game. With the castles being in the upper and lower corners, thankfully a player need only protect 3/4 of his castle. Not that this is an easy task, of course. When a player takes control of a castle at the beginning of the game, the Black Knight image within the chosen fortress is replaced by a crown, which makes it easier for other players to know who either to protect in a co-op game, or who to go after first if they're feeling ornery. I should probably add that the Black Knight totally looks like Baron Karza from the 1977 Micronauts toy line. For the 2% out there that have fond memories of these toys, you will totally know what I'm talking about. In Warlords, you won't have to defend your castle from armies of knights, but ricocheting fireballs. These dangerous projectiles are in fact released at the beginning of the game by a flying dragon that appears and hurls the first fireball into play towards one of the warlords. Now, you might be wondering if there's a reason for these warlords to be going head-to-head. Well, the bezel of the warlord's upright cabinet has a warlord's creed on display. Bear with me here. There be warlords of brawn and might, defending their crowns of gold. Beware the greed of the Black Knight, a power-hungry foe. The dragons spit their fireballs. Warlords, hold up your shields. 'Tis time to protect your castle walls until the Black Knight yields. Sorry about that. While it might be easy to point out how the game is a little like Breakout or even Pong in the basic play mechanics, that would be a great disservice to what Greg Rivera and Norm Avalar accomplished with Warlords. A player using their shield, which they move with the spinner control, will rebound the fireball into a new direction when it makes contact. And later, when there are multiple fireballs zooming across the screen, this is chiefly what a player is doing. However, thanks to the Power Stone button, the same button the player used to start the game, they can capture a fireball. Holding down the button also charges up the projectile, so it will do even more damage when it comes in contact with an opponent's castle walls. It knocks out more of the wall when it hits. This also gives a player the ability to aim where they want that fireball to go. This comes at a price, however, friends, as while you are holding that fireball, the power you are attempting to contain is chipping away at your own castle walls. At various points during a round, an additional fireball will appear, or if you manage to destroy an opponent's castle, which is accomplished when a fireball makes contact with the warlord or Black Knight icon within their castle. Only 4 fireballs will appear on the screen at any given time. But you can probably imagine that when this occurs, the difficulty ramps up quite a bit. When 4 people are playing on the cocktail cabinet, it's a devastating free-for-all. A player needing to figure out if it's worth capturing a fireball for that perfect aim, or just trying to keep their shield moving to block all those projectiles. The scoring for Warlords is rather simple. When your fireball knocks out a piece of your opponent's castle wall, you get 125 points. Destroying a Black Knight-controlled castle gets you 2,500 points, where defeating a warlord, a fellow player, will earn you only 1,000 points. But being the last one standing will net you a whopping 5,000 points times the current level you are currently on. Now then, this brings us back to some differences in the upright and cocktail cabinets once again. With the upright, whether you were playing solo or with another player, score was a concern, I suppose. If the computer-controlled AI in the form of a Black Knight ends up with the last castle standing, the game is of course over. But if a player's warlord is the last castle standing, they not only get those bonus points for surviving, but both the first and second player get to advance to the next stage. Now, if the Warlords manage to defeat the villainous Black Knights on a stage, why, of course, the players are then forced to do battle against each other until there is a victor. And yet again, the winner gets the bonus points, but at least in a two-player game, the second player gets to move on to the next stage as well. However, if you are playing the Cocktail Cabinet and are in a 3-4 player game, there are no scores. You are just trying to be the last warlord standing. And to the victor goes the spoils. Or not in this case. As once the winner is determined, the game is over. For everyone. But, on the one hand, you had a blast getting medieval with your fellow players. Actually, as John Munkus, our chief technician at the arcade, rightfully pointed out, back in the day, this was definitely the most costly way to play the game. And he's totally right. Remember, each player had to insert a quarter to enter the game. The high score holder at the Arcadia Retrocade is, well, we don't know, as it always seems to be a four-player game. However, I would be willing to bet that John Munkus, or regulars Henry Holder, or Michael Dietrich, would nab that top spot. As for the world record holder, according to Twin Galaxies, for solo play, the honor belongs to Peter Skyhill, who scored 911,875 points on August 29th, 1982, verified by a referee. For co-op play, it goes to Jason Cram and David Nelson, with 304,250 points, and was verified by a referee on February 24th, 2007.
And now, these messages.
As an intelligent consumer, I wanted to compare Atari Asteroids with other companies' asteroids. But other companies don't make asteroids. I wanted to compare Atari Missile Command with other companies' missile commands, but other companies don't make that either. Finally, I wanted to compare the new Atari Warlords. Unfortunately, other companies don't make it. When it comes to the video games the world wants most, nobody compares to Atari.
Did you try to break out with an extra ball? Did your warlord win? Did you have a close call? Did your missile command? Did the aliens land? Did you play a game from Atari? Have you played Atari today?
Atari has more video computer games than anyone, and more games means more fun.
Let's play Adventure, okay?
Have you played Atari today?
Atari Anonymous, Boris has a missile command problem.
My mission in life is to save all of mankind.
Lately, my daughter has developed a similar problem with Atari Warlords. Now with video pinball, my husband is acting funny lately. With Atari games so ingenious, so involving, so intense, I ask you, Atari Anonymous, is this problem contagious?
As I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, the 1981 home port of Warlords was where I first was introduced to the game. Even before I was lucky enough to get my hands on the cartridge, I was enthralled by the idea of the game. That was all thanks to the absolutely beautiful artwork on display in the Atari catalogs of the day. I'm sure you might know the one I'm talking about. The painted image of a stern knight, his visor opened as he's raising up a sword to do battle. While reflected in his armor below is a scene of medieval warfare. A catapult launching flaming projectiles towards an enemy castle, landing with explosive might against those fortress walls. It's a stunning painting by Stephen Hendricks, who you might know from his other legendary work on Atari advertising and box artwork, like Haunted House, Missile Command, Defender, and Breakout, to name a few. It probably goes without saying that the graphics for the Atari 2600 version don't exactly match those of the arcade game. But it bears pointing out that the gameplay is just as fun. It also supported the option of having four players at one time, defending their castles with the paddle controllers. While no dragon makes an appearance, players can still catch fireballs and charge it up for throwing it back. And, as a bonus, the manual warns players that if a ball comes near a defeated warlord, his ghost might change the direction of the fireball. Speaking of the ghosts of fallen warlords, I learned that a good strategy is to use those ghosts when playing with others to try and pull off curve shots. Also of note is there is a curious bug in the game. It's been reported that if you start spinning the paddle controller back and forth very fast, your shield will reappear upon your warlord. And if you have the fireball and release it at that point, boom, suicide. And it leaves your castle 100% intact as the kill shot occurred within your castle. Just think of it as a little trick you can pull off to impress your friends the next time you pull out your Atari 2600. Now, the programmer for the home port of Warlords was Carla Meninsky, who besides working on 1980's Dodgem, 1982 Star Raiders, and the home port for Tempest, this was, by the way, a prototype version that was never released. Although a prototype has been made available for play on various Atari Flashback units, as well as Atari's Greatest Hits Volume 1, I know this episode is about Warlords, but it bears sharing that this prototype version is supposedly not the version she worked on. Carla, who was one of two female programmers back in the early days of Atari, would go on to become a lawyer specializing in intellectual property. Also, according to a 2011 interview with Carla by Will Nichols that was shared on the Atari H site, she said, quote, "CoinOp had just finished Asteroids. I spent way too much time downstairs in CoinOp playing Asteroids and then Missile Command and then Battle Zone and then Centipede. After Dodgem, I went straight to Warlords, which was on the list as Kings in the Corner breakout game. I'd like to set the record straight here. I did the 2600 game before the CoinOp game even existed. I think that was the first time a CoinOp game derived from the console game." End quote. I will of course share a link to this fascinating interview by Will on the Retroist post for this episode. It's a great read to say the least. And the fact that we now know the Atari 2600 game came first is an amazing bit of history. While the arcade version of Warlords may have had the Warlord's Creed, there was a pretty interesting backstory provided for the 2600 version of the game. In the manual, it is revealed that a good king named Frederick ruled his kingdom peacefully with Queen Christina until she gave birth to quadruplets, four sons, Dominic, Marcus, Felipe, and Ristivo. His sons quarreled over everything between each other, and King Frederick began to worry that, as they grew into young men, they would possibly tear his kingdom apart with their fighting. So the king sees no choice but to banish his four sons to a forbidden land. There, each manages to build fortifications and do constant battle with each other over the centuries. And friends, that wasn't the only story told for Warlords. While it didn't receive a book and record storybook like Atari's Missile Command and Asteroids, it did get a graphic novel in 1983, released by DC Comics. Written by Steve Skeets and illustrated by David Wenzel. In this graphic novel, the four sons aren't merely would-be warlords, as it takes a more sword and sorcery approach. In fact, the main character of the tale isn't even the warlords, but a troll named Just Plain Dwayne, who manages to become embroiled in their long-standing feuds. Honestly, he's more hobbit or dwarf in my mind than troll. Anyway, this graphic novel is thankfully available for us all to read over at Atari Mania, and I will of course include the link in this show's post. Warlords was a hit in the arcade and of course for the 2600. The home version was chosen as one of the games featured in the 1982 VHS tape How to Beat Home Video Games, Volume 1, The Best Games.
Warlords is a fast-action game for 1-4 players, and it combines elements of Breakout with a game like Outlaw. If you play against 3 computer opponents, you will be the warlord in the upper left corner. Each opponent plays differently, and you should learn to recognize their styles. Of course, if you play against 3 other humans, you'll have to adjust your strategy.
This series was released by Vestron Video and also featured Space Invaders, Demon Attack, Missile Command, Chopper Command, and The Empire Strikes Back, to name a few. It was followed by two more tapes in the series, Volume 2, The Hot New Games, and then Volume 3, Arcade Quality for the Home. Remember that when these were originally released, it would cost you $39.95 to own a copy for your home library. Warlords has been presented on just more than the Atari Flashback and Greatest Hits Volume 1. Versions of it could be found on the Sony PlayStation, Sega Dreamcast, Xbox and PS2, the Nintendo Game Boy Advance, as well as DS, Sony's PSP, and of course for the personal computers. Just recently, back in March of 2016, it was included in the Atari Vault Collection on Steam. Warlords is truly a classic arcade and Atari 2600 title. While many of the players I see enjoying the arcade are continuously being drawn to the likes of Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, I think that Warlords really deserves a special spot in gaming history. Without it, we surely wouldn't have gotten another classic medieval Atari game, 1990's Rampart. As a matter of fact, friends, back in the day, Warlords won the Best Pong Variant at the 1982 Third Annual Archie Awards, as well as receiving an Honorable Mention Award for Best Competitive Game. The Archie Awards, an arcade award show, was co-sponsored that year by both Video Magazine and Electronic Games. Those two awards, I should clarify, were for the Atari 2600 version of the game. Heck, just back in 2005, Game Informer ranked it the 25th best video game of all time, with a quote from the magazine team stating it was the original trash-talking four-player combat game, as well as mentioning the gameplay holds up very well today. I highly agree. Now, at the Arcadia Retrocade, the Warlords cocktail game was purchased by Shay Mathis, the owner and manager of the arcade, a little over a year ago. For a while, we kept it in the party room, but when Shay started seeing how many people were going in there to play it, he brought it out on the main floor, where it sits next to the cocktail versions of Popeye and Frogger. And friends, I think that about brings us to the end of the Warlords episode. I want to thank you all for listening, as well as the kind words you've sent me since I've gone into retirement. Or semi-retirement. You can find out more about the Arcadia Retrocade by visiting their Facebook page. Or, for almost daily posts about the arcade, you can check out the Diary of an Arcade Employee Facebook page. I share all manner of vintage arcade and home console fun multiple times a day. By the way, I am happy to report that just a few weeks back, we celebrated the 5th anniversary of the arcade. Here is to the next 50. If you have any feedback or comments about the podcast, you can always reach me on Facebook or throw me an email at vicsage@retroist.com. You also can often find me posting videos of the arcade on my Instagram account, which is simply vicsage. I also, of course, want to thank The Retroist, not just for hosting the show, but providing a spot on the internet where you can visit throughout the week to find some of the best retro-related articles and podcasts. The Diary of an Arcade Employee is available on Stitcher and iTunes, so if you have a moment, why not help us get the word out on the show by leaving a review and some comments? Until next time, have a token on me as you hear a clip from the subject of a future episode. This has been a Retroist production. Thank you for listening, and have a better one. Goodbye.
End of line.